Well, hello, friends, again. We are at the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 83. And I suppose 83, Section A, we'll see how far we get to go here. We ended with a statement about Libra in general, that it is the balancing between the pairs of opposites, which Gemini somehow so well reveals, and Libra attempts to harmonize, which makes the man in Libra sometimes difficult to understand. Many things that would be pronounced in another sign are muted in Libra, or somewhat subdued, in the attempt not to overstate, not to go to extremes, at least after a certain amount of adjustment has been made and the stage of sometimes swinging wildly between the pairs of opposites is concluded. He appears to vacillate, but never for long, and often unnoticeably. Within his consciousness he can feel this. He can see what his tendencies might be, to vacillate, to oscillate. I guess to oscillate sounds more purposeful than to vacillate. For there is always the final balancing of the qualities with which he is equipped, and he moves towards this final balancing and the decision which may emerge from it. Now we're at the point where we're beginning to discuss the decanates in Libra. And just a quick look at the decanates in landscape show that there is a Libra-Libra, Libra-Aquarius, and Libra-Gemini decanates and sections. The extra zodiacal constellations associated with Libra are the Southern Cross, Crux, Lupus, the Wolf, or the Victim, or the Sacrifice, and Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown, related to Corona Australis, the Southern Crown. The Sephiroidal decanates are interesting. Let's see what DK has to say about them. They're the Moon, Saturn, Jupiter. You see how we move from the so-called planet, the Moon, whose orbit is closest to our Earth and whose period is shortest, all the way to the outer boundary of the intra-Saturnian planets, namely Saturn, and thence to Jupiter. Alan Leo, as conventionally he does, takes Libra-Libra as Venus decanate, Libra-Saturn, or Libra-Aquarius as the Saturn decanate, with perhaps Uranus implied, although there is not a very common use of extra-Saturnian planets, trans-Saturnian planets, in naming the decanates. Why that should be so, we don't yet know, but that's the way DK holds it. And Libra, Gemini, Mercury, naturally enough. Nicholas Nilan is agreeing with Sephiroidal with respect to the form. Wheel of Form, and with regard to the Tibetans' statement, it will be Jupiter, Saturn, and Mercury. And if we reverse that, it would be Mercury, Saturn, and Jupiter. So that gives us the foundation that we need. Okay, so let us see now then what the Tibetan says with that little bit of background that we have. The rulers of the decanates in this sign are again dual in their presentation by different schools of astrologers. Safario gives us the Moon, Saturn, and Jupiter, as we have just seen, and remembering that Safario is not using his assignments by taking into consideration what the Tibetan has said about a clockwise wheel. For Safario, the first decanate is conventionally 0 to 10, the second 10 to 20, the third 20 to 30. Whilst Alan Leo posits the controlling planets as Venus, Saturn, and Mercury. And Alan Leo is always working, says the Tibetan more esoterically, and always beginning from 0 to 10. In this case, as in some others, the truth lies between the two, or in a combination of both. The true rulers of the decanates are Jupiter, Saturn, and Mercury. Now, this is interesting. If we take a look here at the, this is the wheel that Nicholas Nilén has created, make it a little bigger. And we see that whereas we would expect Mars to be the ruler of the first decanate in Aries, the Tibetan posits Jupiter and also Venus. Whereas we would expect Venus to be the ruler of the first decanate of Libra, Tibetan posits Jupiter. So as we begin both hemicycles, the first 180 degrees, the very first decanate is Jupiter, and as we begin the second 180 degrees, the first decanate in Libra is also Jupiter. With Venus perhaps emerging in a stronger position in the Aries position, where the soul, the sun of mind, seeks to immerse itself in form and becomes the soul in incarnation. So this is coming forth from the plane of mind and entering the lower domain by plunging into matter with Aries. With Jupiter as the ruler of the first decanate of Libra, there's going to be a different meaning. Although in a way one is entering the area of group consciousness over which Jupiter, a second-rate planet, presides. It's the bringing together of many individuals, many forces, and creating a coherent wholeness out of them. That is related, of course, to group development and group consciousness. So the truth is lying somewhere between or in the combination of the two, he tells us. And they are Jupiter, Saturn, and Mercury. I think we recognize that for Safario, we do have Saturn in the middle decanate. For Alan Leo, we also have Saturn in the middle decanate. So the Aquarian decanate is considered to be ruled by Saturn by both schools of thought. Mercury correlates well with the Geminian sub-decanate of Libra. And so that goes with Alan Leo. With the middle decanate, both are approved. And with the first decanate, neither one of them offers the same ruler, i.e. Jupiter, as the Tibetan does, although Jupiter is offered as ruler of the third decanate by Safario. And interestingly then, if we were to move in the counterclockwise direction and come into Libra from 30 to 20, Jupiter would be ruling there, according to Safario, in the same way that Jupiter rules 0 to 10, coming in on the counterclockwise reversed wheel motion. He says, I need not enlarge upon their effect, except to point out that the result of the Jupiterian influence is to open the door of the womb in Virgo, a planet which we shall consider when we study that sign of the zodiac, which is our next undertaking. Open the door of the womb in Virgo, for the reception, perhaps, of the germ of the Christ life, which has emerged under stress in the survival mode assumed by the individual in Scorpio and has been given valuation in Libra. Now, this means that as we begin to move backwards through the signs, let me get this into a better, slightly better condition. We will find the individual moving first into Mercury, then Saturn, then Jupiter, and if he's going to go into Virgo, it will be via the 0 to 10 decanate of Libra. So Jupiter then will be opening the door of the womb for the implantation of the Christ germ and for its quickening, perhaps, under Mars, as the Tibetan told us in the last chapter. You see how I've tried to do this, moving from 30 to 20, 20 to 10, 0 to 10, and ending up with sort of a green result, signifying the emergence into fuller personality, at least the mental aspect and the personality aspect are found on the same levels. If we're going to be an integrated personality, it takes place upon the plane of mind, presumably the fourth subplane. Then the counterclockwise direction moves towards the blue, which means a fuller soul, a spirit expression, rather than the green of personality. That's how I've tried to do it in this tabulation. Now, opening the door to the womb. So we're talking about the clockwise motion through 0 to 10, and the Tibetan is going to assume then, I suppose, that the average person does move from Mercury to Saturn to Virgo, I mean Mercury to Saturn to Jupiter, and thence into Virgo. Okay. So we will take up Jupiter in relation to Virgo. Of course, there it's the hierarchical planet. Now, I'm not going to deal with the keynotes until we arrive at that point. So let's go into these tabulations and we see here that the Southern Cross, related to the Christ and possibly also to the base of the spine center, is, according to the Tibetan, well, let's see, according to the labors of Hercules, seemingly associated with the first decanate. In Aquarius, the wolf, the victim, the sacrifice, the centaur has speared the wolf, and perhaps it's his own skin in a way, and it's his own lower nature, and then places that wolf upon the altar of sacrifice in Sagittarius. What is interesting, and of course Saturn, whichever describes a principle of limitation preparatory to a greater expansion, rules the principle of sacrifice. There's one of those planets of sacrifice. One thinks of Sanat Kumara, or Saturn Kumara in a way, standing at his post, which he has decided he will not leave until a certain proportion of pilgrims have found their way home. He says, it's say the last weary pilgrim, but it has to be, I suppose, the last weary pilgrim out of those who can succeed in the particular cycle over which Sanat Kumara is presiding. Yes, but one wonders about his possible appearance in the next solar system. Because if he is truly an emanation of the an emanation of the planetary logos, in other words, the planetary logos in a specific incarnation, then he will be present again in the next solar system. By saying that Sanat Kumara is a direct disciple of the solar logos, in a way, it's like saying that the planetary logos is a direct disciple of the solar logos. This question of what Sanat Kumara actually is a debatable one, but he seems to be actually an emanation of the planetary logos, presently immersed or incarnated in a lower world, even as specific a world as the globe, our particular planetary globe, which has a dense physical body. So he is apparently etherically incarnated on our fourth globe, and also incarnated, I would say, within the cosmic ethers of our fourth globe, and perhaps more largely, within the cosmic ethers even of our fourth chain and our planetary scheme. These things get a little bit intricate, and I don't think we are given to know the whole story of the exact nature of Sanat Kumara, which is being described by the Tibetan in various ways, in various contexts. What's interesting here in the Gemini sub-rulership, well, certainly Libra is connected with Shambhala. It's the royal road to Shambhala, the great center of perfect peace on our planet, or I suppose within our planetary scheme. There seem to be various Shambhalas, or should we say extensions of Shambhala. Shambhala at the globe level, Shambhala at the chain level, Shambhala at the scheme level, and yet they're all one Shambhala. So we seem to be concerned with achieving Shambhala in relation to our planetary globe. But there will be higher achievements, just the way there are three Buddhas of activity associated with our particular planetary globe, three higher beings associated with the chain level, our chain level specifically, and three still higher existences who are higher correspondences of the Buddha, Buddhas, associated with the scheme level. So it should be, although it is not really discussed, in the way Shambhala represents itself on the different globes, in the different chains, and finally, I suppose, in a climactic position on the level of the planetary scheme itself. So there's a certain crowning of the individual that occurs with the northern crown. North is, in a way, the spiritual direction, has to do with the head center, and the northern crown comes to those who achieve entry into Shambhala by following the royal road, the Shushumna, the central channel, which Libra represents. That Mercury may be associated with this, we think of the winged crown. And there are probably other reasons here as well, but Mercury does represent ascent from high to low and from low to high, and it represents the active Kundalini, which ascending finally crowns the individual in a great display. Mercury then and the Sun become one. The Antikarana ends, or the structure of Shushumna Idapengala, which is kind of a reflection of Antikarana, ends in a glorification which is represented by the Sun or by the crown. So Jupiter, Saturn, and Mercury. Well, now let us see what We've gathered together here in this sixfold chart, which will take us through the rulers of the Libra Decanates in relation to the various stages of evolution which one can pass through if one is a Libra. Actually, all human beings do pass through it, but we're interested in what it would mean to pass through these stages influenced by the sign Libra. Well, we will accept, as we must, the Tibetan's analysis of the second decanate, which Leo and Sophariel both agree upon, and of the third, which simply makes sense, with Mercury being so closely related to Gemini. As for the first decanate, okay, Jupiter is given priority. We may wonder why the Tibetan has not chosen Venus, just the way when we move to the first decanate of Aries, we wonder why Mars isn't there, why Jupiter is there, and why Venus may even be more representative of this first decanate. Certainly, these are occult assignments and have to do with the progress of the soul through the wheel. They are not specifically, I think, related so much to personality development, though he does give us that as well. So as we move here, we begin with the physical level. Now remember, in general, we will be speaking of three ruling planets, which are not the same necessarily as the decanate rulers. See, the ruling planets are Venus, Uranus, and Saturn. Now, of these, Saturn is a decanate ruler, but the other two are not. So when we're talking about the stages through which a human being may pass, we realize that all human beings pass through eventually, initially, a Lemurian stage, followed by an Atlantean stage, followed by an Aryan stage, followed by a higher Aryan stage. A higher Aryan stage, which gives us the opportunity for selfish personality integration or for the reorientation of the personality such that one becomes an aspirant or a probationary disciple. This is followed by the fifth stage of true discipleship, and finally by the sixth stage, which is the stage of the initiate. So if we begin at the physical stage, Venus is the orthodox ruler. Even though it is a sacred planet, it is the orthodox ruler. Okay, so we are working here in the physical area. Venus is the ruler, and it is a period of development which is generically ruled by Mars, by the instinctual nature, by the three centers below the diaphragm, and especially by the sacral center, and perhaps the base of the spine center. The law of attraction works within the field of form, the law of attraction, that is Venus, within the field of form, drawn to that which appeals physically. It's the first petal of the egoic lotus, which is most active at this time, and there's a strong sacral center development. The man is very largely under the grip of the sex impulse, and what does it say on page 333 of Esoteric Astrology? Unbalanced fiery passion, human love. So, you know, we could look at this in terms of Mercury, Saturn, and Jupiter. But perhaps it's not so profitable to do that. You can simply, in a way, take a picture of this page and what is said here in green. There's adaptability, some incipient mind used to fulfill instinctual attractions and to acquire that to which the man is attracted. Then coming under Saturn, the man learns the consequences, Saturn, of right and wrong relationship, Venus. So the instinctual nature is involved here. The man under Jupiter is immersed in bodily processes, as would be the case in the generically Martian stage of development, and is seeking instinctual fulfillment on that level only. The law of attraction rules within the world of lower form. Gratification demanded through gratification is Jupiterian. The fulfillment of desire, the sex life is excessive. And there, it's a lower expression of Jupiter altogether, what fulfillment really means. Then we go on to the next stage, which is still under the Orthodox ruler, of course. We're dealing more or less with the second petal of the egoic lotus here. It's a stage of emotional unfoldment. It's still, in a way, a Martian stage of unfoldment. It's the lower personality, and Mars rules every vehicle in the lower personality. And now, from one perspective, Safariel can be looked at as correct because the first or physical phase, if we is ruled by the moon. If we enter, see how we could do this. If we enter here via the last decanate, and we assign Safariel's moon to that last decanate, we would have Moon Saturn Jupiter instead of Mercury Saturn Jupiter. And truly, the moon is the most physical of all the planets. Well, really, it's not a planet per se, but of the five non-sacred planets, it rules the dense physical body especially, and that it is with its connection to the previous solar system and to the moon chain, which is giving all of these instinctual promptings. But it's probably not really legitimate to do that, from a certain perspective. The man is, if we reverse the progress here of Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury, entering from 30 to 20, we would get Mercury, Saturn, Jupiter. But it is tempting to look at this symmetry here and want to put the moon in the Mercury condition. They are, via the third ray of adaptability, of course, related. The moon representing pretty much the third aspect of divinity, and Mercury with its probably third ray adaptable personality also closely aligned with that aspect. Now, if we go ahead, we have Venus again as the Orthodox ruler, and this being a stage in which Venus does rule. The law of attraction prevails strongly. Solar plexus energy increases, the sacral energy still strong, because after all, the sacral is the second center, and we're dealing pretty much with the second petal. Some attraction to that which is considered beautiful or appealing. He says that some artistic ability does enter, the ability to create something of beauty enters with the second petal, and this is Venusian in its nature. A gradual refinement of emotion and taste, a sexual attraction still strong, but the factor of loving desire gradually emerges over a purely physical instinctual desire. There's a more balanced influences of the factor of fiery passion. More balance influences the factor of fiery passion. There are contrasts between factors with different degrees of appeal. These are felt. The man is under the sway of lower second ray factor associated with Venus. Maybe that is the personality ray of Venus. Usually these sacred planets pretty well are expressing only through the three principal rays which rule the periodical vehicles, namely the personality ray, the soul ray, and the monadic ray. So it seems that the personality ray could be operative when we're using a sacred planet in a non-sacred way. But what are the personality rays of the sacred planets? I don't know whether DK has given them to us, so we have to speculate, thinking that for Mercury it might be the third ray and for Venus the second, and maybe for Jupiter the seventh, and perhaps for Saturn the first, or first ray perhaps. And for Vulcan, well, it's difficult to say exactly, but perhaps the seventh ray is involved, or something involving the mineral kingdom. Vulcan is always working in the harder substances of life. Perhaps the fifth and the seventh ray both connect with the mineral kingdom, give a particular facility with that. And I think, well, for Neptune, what might it be? Perhaps the fourth ray. Although that would have to be looked into more specifically. We do have the six-ray soul and the second-ray monad. It's also a trident connected with the third ray, and it is the god of reasoning, although we may mean pure reasoning. When it comes to Uranus, it's either the third ray, or some have speculated, the fifth ray. These are speculations about the personality rays of the various sacred planets. When it comes to non-sacred planets, I think we are given the personality rays because that's how they are principally functioning. A planet like the Earth, even with which is said to be inwardly sacred, is given the third ray personality, even though its inner soul ray is the second ray. So, you know, again, we're looking at that, we're looking at a reversal of the normal situation. Instead of Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury, we're having Mercury, Saturn, Jupiter, and so there, let's see, we can go a little farther. The man is more intelligent under Mercury about fulfilling his desires, and he calculates how to achieve emotional gratification. He uses cunning to unite with that which attracts him. There we see the third ray of Mercury at work. Or if we're under Saturn, the man begins to choose and discriminate Saturn among his attractions. He restricts his relationships to that which truly appeals to him and not simply the gratification of instinctual desire. And under Jupiter, the man indulges. There's a good Jupiterian word. The man indulges in that to which he is most attracted and wants more and more of it. That's Jupiter. He becomes greedy. Jupiter, another word for everything which appeals to him, expanding the scope of his desires. I still have in my mind why the Tibetan did not use Venus for this 0 to 10 decanate, but I don't think that's going to be immediately and quickly answered. Though I do suspect that we should see whether it is Venus or Jupiter which most accords with the constellation the Southern Cross. It could represent kind of a base of the spine center, fourfold, which had not risen to the head area, the way it appears that Draco has, because Draco is associated with the crown area of the great supercosmic logos, the one about whom naught may be said. We have to examine people who we know and see if in this first decanate of Libra they are more Jupiterian or Venusian. I have a feeling that the Alan Leo designations, which are based, I think, on the old Hindu system, always apply, so that there will always be a Venusian quality in the Libris of Libra decanate. But we have to see to what extent Jupiter is more esoterically added. Both Jupiter and Venus are closely identified with the Christ energy. Maybe, in a way, Venus even more, at least in terms of the way humanity experiences the Christ. But Jupiter, of course, represents the heart center and the second ray, and the great beneficence which the Christ brings. When it comes to Lupus, well, there's Saturn and sacrifice. And certainly if we're going to, in a way, deprive ourselves of some of the gratifications that we had been used to in an instinctual way, Saturn is a good planet for privation or deprivation. And then when it comes to the crown, as I've said, Mercury rises from the base of the crown, representing as it does Kundalini active, and it's sort of a symbol of the Antikorana merging into the sun. So still we need to see the correlation there. Now, the correlation of the extra zodiacal constellations with the decanates, I say, this is the province which, to my knowledge, Nicholas Nolan originated. Maybe Alice Bailey hinted at it in the order in which she gave the constellations, but they don't always seem exact, and one still has to think carefully about which of the constellations correlates more with the particular decanates of the sign, considering them, of course, as they would operate in a counterclockwise or reversed wheel manner. When it comes to the mental or lower personal stage, which are closely related because, as stated, the integration of the personality is taking place pretty well on the fourth subplane of the mental plane, and it is there that, in a way, we can think of Mercury with its fourth ray as ruling, sort of a higher and harmonizing aspect of the lower mental plane, but still, in a way, mentally selfish. And we're still very much under the general Venus or orthodox ruler influence. So here the law of attraction begins to affect the mind, which is growing in power at this stage. Of course, a number of millions of years at least have passed before the mind can grow in power. Mercury is very much the concrete mind in one of its levels of interpretation. The man is attracted to that which interests him mentally. One of the great authors has said that love and interest, or interest and love, are basically the same thing. There's kind of an equivalence there between Venus and love and Mercury and love. Both are planets of interest. There is a movement towards the ability to evaluate and to choose that which is of greater value, to see the merits of something mentally. We're probably somewhat dealing here with the third petal of the egoic lotus, which if we consider the outer petals to be ruled by earth signs, then this is kind of a Mercury petal related to Virgo. We would begin with Capricorn, move to Taurus, and then thence to Virgo. So Mercury fits here. The factor of indecision may enter, and a somewhat static equilibrium later to be disrupted. The fifth ray potentials of Venus are consciously emerging. The process of weighing and balancing is beginning at this general stage. This is done in a human way and not in a desirous way. This is called, page 333, the weighing of the opposites. This is improved judgment, some elevation of sacral energy to the throat center, contributing to the growth of intelligence. Okay. Now, if we go back and take a quick look at what this can mean in the general Mercury, Moon, Saturn, Jupiter clockwise movement, the mind becomes increasingly intelligent. The man evaluates more skillfully. I guess maybe one shouldn't say skillfully, maybe not yet, let's just say more skillfully. Then under Saturn, the man's capacity for mental judgment increases. He weighs the consequences, and that's a Saturnian word, of his actions. Saturn is generally the planet of, what shall we say, look before you leap. See what you're about to get into. Stop. Pause. Assess. In this sense, Saturn looks to the future, perhaps based upon the lessons of the past. And then under Jupiter for the 10 to 0 section, the man expands his interests, the mind expands and moves to possess that which he thinks is valuable or beautiful. He learns to appreciate with his mind. And this, of course, is also a somewhat Venusian idea, the idea of appreciation. But in this mental phase, he is at least expanding his contacts and his relationships. Now, as the personality begins to integrate on a lower turn of the spiral, using the mind in this actually quite eventually mental sign, we are ready for the reversal of the wheel. The reversal of the wheel is, as we've been told, occurring strongly in the sign Libra. The impetus there for reversal is found. And the tipping of the scale means a firm decision is taking us into the tests of Scorpio. So we consider now the decanate rulers as they would progress from Jupiter, first decanate, with kind of a general subtone of Venus. At least I've seen that work out. You know, when I look at the behavior and appearance of people, they do tend to reflect the constellational sub-sign. Libra, in this case, moving to Libra Aquarius, and then on to Libra Gemini. They do seem to reflect these qualities. And I think, you know, the closest examination of people on a large scale, a large enough sample, is required so that the characteristic behaviors actually are made clean and clear. Now, everyone is, of course, an individual and has distinctive behaviors and has developed along a distinctive path over many, many years, millions of years, in fact. So there will always be differences from person to person. But perhaps one can learn to recognize commonalities. Perhaps one can learn to recognize factors that stand out as sort of in common, common denominators. A great experience with humanity is required. So now we are reaching an aspirational phase. It's the higher personal phase, the integrating phase. Now, the personality is really coming together. It may be selfish at first. coming together in a selfish way, and eventually, if that proves futile, it will become aspirational. And one will begin to become the aspirant. We're talking then, in general, with this reversal about fifth petal development. So we're still, in a way, that higher person, but we're gradually becoming advanced man. So we're still under Venus, in a sense, which is the orthodox ruler. In a sense, we're on the... we're beginning to approach the later stages of the mutable cross. Under Venus, there is a harmonizing and integrating of the personal life, and this is called devotion and aspiration. Enter. So the beginning of attraction to a higher power, which Venus can always represent, and for the advancing man, which Uranus can begin to represent. This is represented by Venus, the planet of the solar angel. The pairs of opposites, soul and personality, are gradually recognized, as they must be during the experience of the love petals in general, though true balance between them does not yet exist. Intelligence continues to increase as sacral energy, conditioned partially by Uranus. We're given that Uranus is the ruler of sacral energy, is raised to the throat center, with which Libra should have a lot to do because constellation that brings through the third ray. The third ray is increased. The value of the individual while in relationship emerges under Uranus. It's not just the traditional instinctual way of relating, but relating as individuals, and Uranus is always, since it relates to the finally to the highest archetype, is bringing through the reflection of that archetype as individuality. So Uranus is beginning to make his presence felt. This is a preparation for the first reversal of the wheel. It is perhaps a reversing of the wheel. Occurring at the later part of this stage, and Uranus ruling the advanced man in Libra is making itself felt. Now also we can find as a result aberrations, maybe there are two, aberrations in relationship. Let's see, how is that word spelled? Aberrations in relationship are found here. Entering into new social contracts, based on man-made laws, promoted by the requirement that individuality, IND, be preserved. So I think I did not emphasize here enough that Uranus will be coming in. I think if we look here at esoteric psychology, esoteric astrology, and we go to page 333, we will see that, or even up to 332 here, the advanced man is coming in here. And the advanced man should be found in the fifth petal processes of the egoic lotus, which are occurring with the reversing wheel. So integration and reorientation of the individual, these are occurring, and I think Uranus should be included here as the esoteric ruler. The esoteric ruler perhaps is sensed more than actually utilized. The true probationary disciple is beginning to utilize this esoteric ruler, and the disciple definitely does. I mean, these are different tabulations which we are trying to line up. They don't line up exactly, because the advanced man, although involved in fifth petal processes, has not necessarily reversed the wheel in the sense that he is responding to the soul. And yet, a truly integrated and skillful personality is the result of soul attention. So we're in a general fifth petal area here, I think, but the fullness of the petal is not achieved, nor are we necessarily yet, we're not the initiative of the first degree. Toward the end of the petal, we are on the path, and then when we're on the path, at least in a probationary sense, we would have to consider what the esoteric ruler could tell us. DK warns us against applying esoteric rulers too early to those for whom they cannot mean anything, those who cannot really receive this energy. We have to be careful about making all things given apply to all levels. This is where I sometimes have my reservations about whether we should be using hierarchical rulers in a practical way to represent the mentality, esoteric rulers to represent the emotionality, and then, of course, orthodox rulers simply the physicality. It's an interesting system. The question is, does it really bear out in how people actually behave? That is the question. Okay. Well, I may have left the audio on a little bit while I was doing a little research here. Let's take a look here at the forward movement, the counterclockwise movement. We'll move from the Jupiter decanate through the Mercury decanate, and we're in this stage of true personality integration and a higher form of response, which we call the aspirational life. So the man becomes refined and socially successful under Jupiter, and I'm including Venus here too. He is able to manage groups of individuals, here's the group consciousness, and to promote a cooperative attitude. His intelligence and individuality increase because he is becoming increasingly integrated as Uranus begins to play its role. He eventually begins to be attracted by the higher of the pairs of opposites, and reversing the wheel, aspires towards the soul in the latter part of this phase. He seeks to enter into union with the soul. His unions are not so strictly human. They must have the spiritual potential as well. And then looking at this from the perspective of Saturn, which rules the second decanate for the integrating individual, the aspiring individual in Libra, enthusiastic wisdom, remember that one in relation to Libra? The intelligent, capable man learns the rules. There's Saturn. Let's put that in. Saturn, obviously. Rules of right social relations and seeks to behave. There's another Saturn word accordingly. He realizes there are consequences to every action. And Saturn bestows upon us the karmic consequences of our action. We are met with that opposite and equal reaction to the quality of our action and to the strength of it. He works to emerge as an individual, yes, under Uranus, and yet remains correct with regard to other individuals within the bounds of law, sacrificing his instinctual nature, I suppose, with respect to the identification with Lupus, which is placed upon the altar. He develops sound judgment. He makes those decisions which move him towards the reversal of the wheel. This is happening, the first reversal in the later part of this stage. He becomes an effective decision maker. And let's say that under discipline, selfishness, Mars in detriment, is weakened. Now, this is a good thing about Libra, the potential weakening of selfishness, which relates to the ego, lower ego, under the Sun and Mars. Finally, we're into the Gemini part of Libra. The man works intelligently within social situations. Wherever we're dealing with Libra, we have the factor of society. It's pretty much that way with all the air signs. He works intelligently, there's Mercury, within social situations. He develops social intelligence, Venus, Mercury. Venus for the general phase, a high part of Venus for the general phase. He facilitates cooperative communication and action between individuals and groups. So he is a communicator in a social sense. He works with facility in the area of personnel and management. Libra is always, it seems, good at that. And Mercury facilitates the communication. Success crowns his efforts. Corona Borealis. Well, there's different kinds of success, aren't there? There's some that are ultimate crownings and other that are partial crownings. But we're not yet at any sort of ultimate stage with respect to human development. Now, friends, I think we may be, I can't tell exactly what our time is because I inadvertently left the audio running while I was doing a little bit of research. And so there was a big gap, and I'm not sure how long it lasted. But I think we are somewhat at the end here of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 83A and moving into 83B. I'll give it about, I'll say that it was about 8 or 9 minutes, my little interlude here. Many things to manage simultaneously.